They rode on into the cemetery. He dismounted at last, first time in hours, sat down on stone in silent pain. He thought, body not much good, but the mind works well. Two young lieutenants sat down near him, chewing on corn dodgers. He squinted. He did not remember their names. He could remember if he had to, duty of a good officer. He could fish in the memory for the names and pull them out of the darkness after a while. But though he was kind to young lieutenants, he had learned a long time ago it was not wise to get to know them. One of these had wispy yellow hair, red freckles. He had a strange resemblance to an ear of corn. The other was buck-toothed. Buford suddenly remembered. The buck-toothed boy is a college boy, very bright, very well educated. Buford nodded. The lieutenants nodded. They thought he was a genius. He had thrown away the book of cavalry doctrine, and they loved him for it. At Thoroughfare Gap, he had held against Longstreet 3,000 men against 25,000 for 6 hours, sending off appeal after appeal for help which never came. The lieutenants admired him greatly, and he could sometimes overhear them quoting his discoveries. Your great fat horse is transportation, that's all he is, with no more place on a modern battlefield than a great fat elephant. He turned from eager eyes, remembering the cries for help that never came. That time it was General Pope. Now it was General Meade. Make no plans. He sat watching the lights come on in Gettysburg. The soldiers bordered the town along the west and the north in two long, fire-speckled fences, a lovely sight in the gathering dusk. The last light of June burned in the west. He had one marvelous smoke. A dreamy cigar. Tomorrow he will come, old Bob Lee himself, down that western road on a gray horse, and with him will come about 70,000 men. One of the lieutenants was reading a newspaper. Buford saw rippled black headlines, "Citizens of Pennsylvania, prepare to defend your homes," a call for militia. He smiled. Militia would not stop old Bobby Lee. We have good old George Meade. Now, have faith. He might be very good. The hell he is. Buford peered quickly around, not knowing if he had said that out loud. Damned bad habit. But the lieutenants were chatting. Buford looked past them to the silent town. Pretty country, but too neat, too tidy. No feel of space, of size, a great starry roof overhead, a great wind blowing. Well, you are not a natural Easterner, that's for sure. Extraordinary to think of war here. Not the country for it. Too neat. Not enough room. He saw again the White Angel. He thought, damn good ground. He sat on a rail fence, watching the night come over Gettysburg. There was no word from the patrols. He went around reading the gravestones, many Dutch names, ghostly sentinels, tipped his hat in respect, thought of his own death, tested his body, still sound, still trustable through a long night, but weaker, noticeably weaker, the heart uneven, the breath failing. But there was at least one good fight left. Perhaps I'll make it here. His mind wandered. He wondered what it would be like to lose the war. Could you ever travel in the South again? Probably not for a while. But they had great fishing there. Black bass rising in flat black water. Ah. Shame to go there again, to foreign ground. Strange sense of enormous loss. Buford did not hate. He was a professional. The only ones who even irritated him were the Cavaliers, the high-bred, feathery, courtly ones who spoke like Englishmen and treated a man like dirt. But they were mostly damn fools, not men enough to hate. But but it would be a great shame if you could never go south anymore. For the fishing, for the warmth in winter. Thought once of retiring there. If I get that old.